Are you an entrepreneur, creative pro, or in a transition to becoming one? Welcome to the Create Something Awesome Today podcast, where it's all about enabling you to develop the skills and mindset encouraging success and helping you to thrive with everything you do. And of course, helping you create something awesome today. And now your host, creative entrepreneur and founder of Awesome Creator Academy, Roberto Blake.
Hey everybody, this is Roberto Blake helping you create something awesome today with one of the most awesome creators on the planet, the Marques Brownlee, aka MKBHD.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for doing the interview. Like, you are one of literally the top tier creators in YouTube. Definitely somebody who has been said to have had more influence over the tech world than the New York Times.
It's been said.
It's been said. I'm just going to say, you know, it's influenced more of my buying decisions than New York Times ever did.
I hope in the correct direction too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Not anything my wallet thanks me for, but you know,
fair.
Definitely. So I've watched your content evolve and grow. You are someone who's been doing this since you were like 14 years old and you got into this. One of my first questions is, when you were 14 years old, and you like did your first 100 videos to get to 78 subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
What was going through your mind at the time while you were creating and just diving into this world of online content?
Yeah, it was new and it was fun. And when I was making those first 100 videos or even the first 300 videos, I wasn't thinking about subscribers or like building up an audience. It was mainly just me having fun sharing what I found interesting about those computers and that software to whoever would watch. And it was cool to kind of see the numbers. Like, it's one person in my bedroom talking to 13 people watch this video. That's crazy. No one would normally have listened to me talk about that.
10 years ago, that's a real big deal.
Right.
Like, I remember, I'm a little older than you. I'm 10 years older than you. So for me, I was 20 years ago. I was that age.
Mm-hmm.
And just having access to the internet and having access to people all over the world was still a big deal.
Yeah.
Do you think that we've somehow gotten away from that and lost the magic of just how special it is to connect to other people across the world?
Maybe a little bit. I know that a lot of people now will say they're starting a YouTube channel or making videos just in an effort to be famous or to be successful on YouTube rather than the fact that they want to actually share something with people. And I think there is a distinction there, but I still think I do see people genuinely making content to try to be helpful to people, to try to be entertaining to people, really focusing on their craft for that reason. So as much noise as there is of other people doing other stuff, there still is that.
I believe that as well. In fact, speaking of, you know, being helpful to other people, that really was how I think your journey started, because you started with really basic software tutorials and also just exploring what you thought was cool about tech you had access to. And it wasn't a lot at the time.
Yeah.
You know, what made you like decide that that was something you were going to do?
To start making videos? I just wanted to. I remember when I first made a YouTube channel, I just wanted to just upload like videos of my golf swing and see if anyone on the internet could give me comments because I couldn't afford a swing coach.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, people came through and were leaving feedback and I was useful to connect to people. And then when I got this laptop, it was that whole process of like, all right, what laptop do I buy? Do I look at some videos of some other laptops and see which ones are good and maybe someone recommends one? And when I finally got it, I wanted to add to that pool of information. So if someone else is in my shoes, they can make a more informed decision. So that's the baseline for what spawned those first videos.
So essentially, you were making content for people like you.
Right. Exactly. I was making videos that I would have loved to have seen when I was in my purchase decision process. Yeah.
No, that makes total sense. And I think that's where a lot of people, myself included, we still turn to that wider community, because any decision that we can make with more information and more perspectives is just going to be a better decision than if we just went with 100% of our own intuition. I still believe that.
Exactly.
That's why your videos still influence my life.
Yes.
So your master plan worked out.
Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. So I have a couple of other interesting questions here.
Sure.
I would say that technology is a big part of who you are. It's definitely a big part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that people are relying too much on technology, or do you think we could actually be using it more to better our lives?
Both. Can I say both?
Yes,
I think
you can say both.
There's times when I really believe I'm too dependent. Like, I'll walk out of a building in New York City and immediately open my phone and look at the map, because I don't know where I am physically. I could be downtown, I could be midtown, I got dropped off. I don't know. So I rely on maps a lot. I rely on tech all the time. First thing I do every time I wake up is check, you know, Twitter or email or whatever it is, and that can feel like you're too reliant. But at the same time, there's things like autopilot. There's things like just helpful pieces of technology that you feel can benefit more from, that can actually help people more. So it's sort of a double-edged sword where it's so helpful that you feel dependent on it in a way.
What's the most helpful piece of technology in your life right now?
I feel like cheating by saying my phone, because I feel like that's everyone's answer, but I really don't think I'd make it very far without my Google Calendar, my email, my smartphone, my navigation. It's just all in one place, mm-hmm. and it's constantly in use.
This has become the focal point of our lives. What do you think, from a technology standpoint, was the focal point of your life 10 years ago?
Huh. That's 10 years ago, because honestly, at that point, it was just like I had not even a smartphone. I didn't have a computer. It would be my music player. I had a CD player probably mm-hmm. around that time. I think I graduated from cassette tapes to CDs, and then there was a little CD player period, and then it was like smartphones, but I think my CD player...
Did you skip the like whole MP3 player thing?
I had a Zune HD. I had a Zune HD, and that, right, I think, was my MP3 player phase, but if you go 10 years back, I think you'd find me with a CD player in my hands.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that we were just on the cusp of, like, say, the iPod...
Yep.
Right at that point, but it was also super inaccessible at that point in time.
Yeah, it was like $1 per song, and it was a whole lot, and I didn't want all that, but I just got like one CD, that was cool.
Awesome. So I definitely agree with you that, you know, it definitely goes both ways. Mm-hmm. But speaking of technology and changing or bettering people's lives, but also controversies around technology, I know that Elon Musk is somebody that you really admire.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Yeah.
That said, if you had the opportunity to have him in this chair, what are some of the things that you would ask Elon? Elon, if you're watching.
Yeah, man. There's all kinds of future. Elon talks constantly about future products and future ideas and just things that he's planning on doing. And I think the first 20 of my questions would be, you know, that time you talked about this, like, is that happening? Like, I tweeted at him last night about autopilot in the new Roadster, and he answered with some ridiculous, like, yeah, we're also planning augmented mode with, like, telemetry and, like, all this, like, crazy plans, like a heads-up display in the Roadster.
Is this real?
I want to know about so many plans for the future of, especially Tesla, which I'm a huge fan of.
Yes. I think we've all established that you're huge.
Yeah, no,
Tesla.
Clearly there's no hiding it, obviously. But then I'd probably just want to know about things like, you know, foresight and future planning and thoughts about just tech in general.
You'd want like just a little peek at the roadmap.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be really exciting.
Yeah, no, I think that would definitely be exciting for a lot of us too.
Yeah.
Have you read his book?
No.
Like, I've started. It's a good read. Like, I definitely would recommend.
Is it autobiographical or more
It's story? It's not autobiographical. It's like, I don't want to spoil it.
But okay.
Like, I think you would enjoy it. And I think it'd be very interesting to you.
Word.
Now, you started out very modestly when you were, you know, starting to film your videos. You were using like a webcam, and then you graduated to... I believe it was a camcorder first, and like you've just evolved and progressed. And I want to know, like, what was going through your mind as you made those decisions to constantly upgrade gear? Because like right now, you are the gear guy. You are like at the pinnacle
for sure
of that. But it started out ridiculously modest. Like, how did you think about and plan that evolution?
Yeah, I guess a part of it was timing. Like it has to start somewhere. So if I'm starting YouTube in 2018, immediately the question a lot of people think of is, what camera should I buy? I can't just use my phone. I got to get this nice set of gear. But starting YouTube in 2008, it was just like, you know, I have a webcam on my laptop. Good enough. Let me just make a video.
Yeah.
So I did that. And I've always been into tech and into video in a way where this obsession with quality just kind of manifests itself in the growth of the channel. I hesitate to use the word boredom, but there's got to be a better word where like I use the same camera for like 2 straight years and I'm like, time to step it up and like really see what I can do at the next level.
It's that you wanted to challenge yourself.
That, yeah, definitely expanding. When you get comfortable with something like your equipment or like your routine, That's often a great place to be for a while, but sometimes you want to shake it up, and naturally getting used to something at one level makes me want to see what it's like at the next.
Absolutely. Oh, can someone check and see where we're at on the camera time? Because the Sony has a 30-minute limit. It's the only one I'm really worried about.
Word. I'd say we're
about 12.
14 minutes in.
10 minutes and 20 seconds.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Both wrong.
I'm closer. All right. There are a lot of people that don't realize that, like, you did all of this while you were in school. And if I'm not mistaken, you were a business major in school.
Yes.
What made you decide to become a business major versus going something that seems more acclimated toward your skills and interest and channel, in the sense of you could have went computer science or you could have went filmmaking, and that's what a lot of people would have expected.
Yeah.
You went business, which fascinates me as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. I'm doing this all in high school, and I go to college, and when I'm looking for colleges, I'm actually looking for marketing. Because at that point, especially in my channel's history, it's a lot of like my interactions and my introduction to business was talking to marketing people. So it's like I wanted to review these headphones. I'm talking to the CMO of this headphone company. So I just get super curious about like, well, what if my job someday is being that guy that talks to YouTubers? So I wanted to be in marketing. I ended up going to a tech school, and I did have a bit of computer science in there. I had information systems as one of my concentrations, but ended up just diving headfirst in all of the business, the international business, the marketing, and everything in between as my degree, and I think it helped a lot.
I would definitely say it definitely helped you from my perspective, watching from the outside in. I've seen you approach YouTube, I think, more than almost anyone else I've seen that didn't have or come from being a business owner first. I've seen you approach as an entrepreneur. I've seen you approach as like a businessman, like, you know, without giving away the secret sauce.
Yeah.
What would you say like influenced your business decisions as a YouTuber and how you treat it like a business versus what you see a lot happening in the creator community?
Yes. I guess the main focus as far as business is to just on the outside have it appear as unlike a business as possible. So it's at the end of the day, it is a business, but it also is like a personal connection to the people talking, and keeping it that way can feel like a challenge when, you know, you're shooting with, you know, in a studio and there's big cameras and lights and things like that. But just me turning on the camera and talking to it is how it started, and that's just kind of how it feels. The business behind it, which is, you know, the access to companies and in general the ability to do more, is what you have to manage. So it turns into like a, well, do I want to show the behind the scenes of this company, or can I do a collaboration with this product that's inaccessible? You know, all these different things come with the businesses talking to each other. But at the end of the day, after all that happens, you still want to make it the video.
Exactly. What would you say is the balance of the time that you invest in business development, meetings, planning, schedule, purchase orders, all these intricate things that people don't necessarily associate with doing a YouTube channel?
Yeah.
What would you say is the balance between that and then the actual content creation from a time standpoint?
I would say a lot of people who are getting into YouTube are like, I want to get an editor, I want to get a cameraman and all these things. I outsource those things when I can. So I have a financial accountant, I have people who can do taxes and things like that, where I don't have to spend a whole bunch of time focusing on that, where the majority of my time still does go into the production, the writing, the creative, and all that. So I'd still say it's 85% that. I'd say most of the time is really writing and coming up with how exactly to make what video, and then we do it.
Because people don't realize that you structure and research your videos extensively.
Yeah. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that you don't see behind the decision to make every video and what goes into it. But on that end, it's been like, that's the creative section. That's the extension of my brain on the internet, where the finance and the business part I can actually outsource because it's less critical to the forward-facing part.
No, that makes total sense. And that's something that I can definitely appreciate. You know, a lot of creators, they don't have the forethought of saying, you know what, there's a lot of things I'm not good at. Let me take those things off my plate, or I haven't mastered those things, or they take away and they drain. Because I would imagine there are certain things that are draining more mm-hmm. than others that would take away from the creative process. Mm-hmm. What do you think is probably the most draining aspect of it that you're like, wow, I'm so glad I got rid of this so I can focus on creating?
Yeah, it's the financial like management part, where it's like I know that, you know, generally just be responsible. Like, you know roughly what you're coming in, what you're going out. So like, don't go crazy with that. And then putting back into the business in a productive way from that end is all I really have to focus on. But like taxes and investment and keeping that whole half of it afloat, mm-hmm. I'm really glad I'm not doing that every single day.
No, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So here's one that I think is really interesting. Like, I bet you no one's ever asked this one.
Okay.
Do you plan at some point in your life building a tech company or app?
Mm. Yeah, I've been asked a version of that, which is, when are you going to make your own phone? Because I spend so much time criticizing phones that come out that eventually people are like, well, if you made an MKBHD phone, it would be perfect, right? And I know how hard that is. I know that that's probably never going to happen. But, you know, as far as what I do, it's just kind of just become an extension of this channel. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, we've opened a merch store and we've kind of become almost, not the word fashion designer is way off base, but it's like we are making fashion that we think people would want to wear that also have our same interests. So if yeah. there's a little bit of tech in there, there's a little bit of like snarky like humor and things like that. It's not a whole new company, but it's an extension of the channel.
Yeah, I get
so,
that.
So yeah, anything else that I start to do that isn't making videos would probably evolve as an extension of the channel the way it exists.
No, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
See, I told you I would get you some.
That is unique. I can't lie.
So when you were in school, mm-hmm. how were you able to manage and balance creating content with maintaining your grades in school? Because again, you graduated with top marks, you went to a good school, mm-hmm. you did this through high school, through college the entire time, which is like a huge challenge. And, you know, bravo to you. That's a big accomplishment.
It is.
And time. You still managed to be successful in all of those things, which a lot
you.
Of people, that contradicts common wisdom.
Right.
How did you manage that?
What do they say about like colleges? Like pick two out of the three, like social life, good grades, and sleep. I just picked good like grades and sleep. That's uh-huh. I just didn't like go out, or I didn't have any extra things to do. Mm-hmm. So I guess time management is the bottom line, is the answer. It's like I definitely focused on putting my time into bins. I had Ultimate, which was like every weekend. I knew it would be weekends.
Yep.
We had practice Wednesday, Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Like, I will never do anything else in those times other than Ultimate. And then for schoolwork, it would be the school class. I go to every class. I have that bin of time. And then when that is done, I know I can do videos and I can work on the channel, and that will always be the time I use for that. And then eventually I sleep.
So essentially, it sounds like your Google Calendar was literally calendar blocked and color coded.
Yeah, I think I at one point, like, I use Google Calendar a lot. And then at one point, I looked over someone's shoulder in class and saw like all these color coordinated things in the calendar. I was like, oh, that's really a great idea. I'm going to do that. And then from that point on, I always had like red and blue blocks for different amounts of time for what I did at different points during the day.
Makes total sense. I'm actually surprised it wasn't red and gray blocks.
Yeah, I think it was just because the default color was blue and I just had red as an option. I don't know. But yeah, I definitely have a lot more colors in there now.
This might literally be the most controversial question we ask in this interview.
Let's do it.
What do you think of the current state of YouTube?
Mm-hmm. The current state of YouTube. If there was like a state of the union for YouTubers, more noise than ever. That could not be further from wrong. Like, there's just so much happening on YouTube. And I think when there's so much noise, it's really easy to focus on, like, you can amplify, like, the bad parts or the little things you focus on. But if you step back and look at the big picture, there's a lot of great happening, too.
Oh, yeah.
I think back to YouTube in, like, 2008, where there was, like, 8 or 9 tech channels, like, actually 8 or 9 tech channels.
Like our friend Chris Perillo.
Yes, Chris Perillo being one of those guys. Justine being one of those. Mm-hmm. Mark Watson, Soldier Knows Best.
Yep.
John 4 Lakers.
I remember that.
And then a bunch of the retired ones that I don't even want to name, but they're like clearly OG channels that no longer make videos. Like literally a dozen tech YouTubers.
Yep.
And it would be so easy to focus on like the one that you don't like that you forget about the ones that you do like. Now it's multiply that by 1,000. Now there's 12,000 tech channels and 1,000 ones you might not like. When you look at the state of YouTube, you're like, there's 1,000 bad channels that I really don't like. But if you focus too hard on that, you'll ignore the 12,000 great channels that are worth subscribing to. So a lot of noise, but a lot of good stuff.
No, I agree. And I love the fact that a lot of people complain about YouTube being saturated. But I don't think that anything is ever saturated with quality. I mean, you've reviewed so many different tech products from different brands, but there's always the standouts. We know in the phone market, there's like, you know, you have your big five, despite the fact that there are at least about a good, I want to say 38 major manufacturers of smartphones.
Yeah.
But there's like five that stand out, and there is a top 10 for a reason.
Yeah.
I never believe that there's a saturation of quality in any market. If you had an abundance of quality, it like, what is it? They call it an embarrassment of riches.
Sure.
So what are your thoughts on the notion of saturation and the fact that it's impossible to compete anymore?
Yeah, I think if you look at a chart, YouTube's been growing every year. So when you think of saturation by the dictionary definition, it should flatline because you're saturated. But YouTube keeps growing every year. So it's clearly not saturated. And there's still room for new channels and new growth. But at the same time, I think the word barrier to entry or the phrase barrier to entry comes to mind when you think about like, oh, it's too saturated. I can't get started. There's too much I have to do to make it on YouTube.
Comparatively.
Right. Based on what it used to be. To which I would say everyone has to start somewhere and you never know. You might get lucky. You might have a great strategy. You might have a unique idea or a unique channel or a unique genre or a vision or just something that's different. So if you start off with the goal of maximizing that rather than I just want to make it, then it's a lot easier to think about making quality rather than, oh, it's so saturated, I can't do anything.
Do you think it's an issue partly, because this is the phrase that I'm throwing around. I would like your thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. I'm going with the phrase that everybody wants a voice, but very few people have something to say.
I agree. Yeah. And even a lot of people have a voice, but a lot of people are just parroting what other people are saying. So you have a voice, but if you're not using it to express yourself, that might as well not matter. You're just adding into the pile of things that are already being said. There's a lot of noise, and that makes those voices harder to hear sometimes, and it can be more difficult to discover unique individual voices. But when you do, they can be really rewarding. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, seeing the rise of like a lot of channels that are like starting to get some traction in the space. People like Drew from Tylos of Tech, who you collaborated with, John Prosser, Front Page Tech. Like we're seeing that there are different micro niches within the general genres of YouTube.
That's exactly right. I was thinking like, when I said there was 12 tech channels, there literally were. Now there's tech channels, but then there's like tech channels dedicated for certain companies. Tech channels dedicated for hating certain companies and loving certain companies. And then there's tech channels dedicated towards sarcastically hating certain companies. Like there's so many micro niches inside every little possible subject, which is really interesting. And I love finding them because then I'm like, oh, this
I love
is
it as a, viewer.
A new way to look at it.
I love it as a viewer. It's like, oh, I have something different now. I have something that's a different form of entertainment.
Yeah.
Or it's like, or I have a different perspective. It's like, I mean, viewers like choice. And I think that an abundance of choice doesn't become a bad thing unless it feels truly overwhelming, and I don't feel we're there yet.
Yeah, and there's also the confirmation bias in a way where, like, if you have an opinion, you could just Google it and find people who agree with you.
Yes.
Now, that also kind of is starting to exist on YouTube where, like, you know what? I really like the notch on the new iPhone. And then you look it up, and this other guy likes it too, and he's making a whole... And there's 1,000 views. Yo, people agree with, they like the notch. Like you can find pretty much any opinion or perspective on something you want to find, and it's on YouTube somewhere.
Speaking of things like bias and confirmation bias, like how have you protected yourself and protected your channel from, you know, skewing things and maintaining your objectivity? Because I don't think there's a such thing as a lack of bias. It's just a matter of anyone of integrity can stop their bias from keeping them from reaching true objectivity. I think, in my opinion, you do that well, but what are the steps you've taken in order to ensure that?
Yeah, I would say I am very upfront about what I like and don't like. And so even if I don't even think I would consider myself truly objective, I think it's just very clear from the beginning what I like and don't like. Mm-hmm. And so when I skirt that line, if that line is off center, you at least know that already. Mm-hmm. So if I say like I use a bunch of Google services. I love Google Calendar. I rely on Gmail. Like there's a bunch of things that I just can't live without. So you know what? I use an Android phone and these services tie in great. And you know that from the front, and then I'm reviewing an Android phone and I like it for those reasons, or I dislike it because it does some things wrong. Like you already know where that line is.
Right.
And then you can calibrate yourself to me every time. Same thing with hardware.
Right.
So it's been just sort of being upfront and immediate about what I like and don't like. And if it's ever blurry, then I probably don't feel strongly about it.
Do you feel like there's ever been a product that you may not have given a fair shake? Like I feel like I framed something once very to a point to where it didn't come out the way that I wanted it with software. Like I'm a Adobe fanboy. People know that in and out. And you know, I definitely been called an Adobe shill more than once, even though it's like it's a pretty
If you like something
truth.
Enough, someone will call you a shill for it. Yeah.
Of course. But I grew up with Adobe. It was my gateway into a new world. Like I have been using Adobe almost as long as you've been alive.
So did someone come out and say like, yo, why don't you try Final Cut, and you didn't give it a fair shot?
Well, no, I actually gave Final Cut a fair shot. Uh-huh. And the only reason that I don't use it for the faster render times on my MacBook Pro is because I like the workflow from my Mac to my PC. And I also like the fact that in the event that there's certain things I want to do because I use the other Adobe programs, I can literally just feel more comfortable with it.
Exactly.
And the thing is, I did use Final Cut back in version 7. I wasn't a fan of version 10 as much.
Right.
A lot of people had that issue.
Yeah.
But I've actually been using it more. It was actually Affinity, the budget competitor to Adobe's Photoshop and
Lightroom.
And Illustrator. They have Affinity Photo and Affinity Designer. I don't know if you're that familiar with it.
Gotcha, okay.
But it's a budget, like $60 version of it. And it's like, I think that's dope for anyone who wants a budget. But the thing is, I always said it wasn't an Adobe killer because the lack of an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Similar to things that you've talked about with the Apple and the Google ecosystems. And I just feel like when I presented that, I didn't think it was a Photoshop killer, that I didn't give enough context to the things I liked about it.
Yeah. Context matters a lot. I can say that I know, like, here's an example of a pretty well-viewed negative review I did, which was HTC U Ultra. A couple months, maybe a year ago, of like maybe one of the least liked phones in a while. I know how hard it is to make a good phone. There's a lot of choices you have to make about the use of space in a phone and the choice of parts and how expensive you want it to be versus cheap versus how you're going to market it. There is many, many months of decisions that go down that road. So I know that when a phone comes out, the company didn't just slap it together and put it out. But like when I make that video and I'm like, okay, look, poor use of space here. You could have done this. You could have done that. It's not like the company hasn't thought of that. But oftentimes it can make it seem like I'm oversimplifying. Like you should have just put a headphone jack here. You should have just made the bezel smaller. Like those types of things come with context. You have to know all of what goes into making a phone before you start to wrap up your thoughts about how it actually came out.
Right. And the how it should be.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's the same thing with when I make criticisms of like, say, Apple. And it's because I actually love Apple. It's like, we got I'm all Appled out here, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I'm willing to ignore things that I don't like and that I wish were better. That would like keep me in the camp. Primary example, the HomePod. You did a very interesting, somewhat controversial video about the HomePod.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I personally felt like it was an incomplete product. I felt like the AirPods are almost a perfect product. You should have had Bluetooth just like you do for the AirPods.
Yeah. That criticism comes from a place of actually liking it. I want it. It's so good. But it's so like close to being perfect that I want it to get there.
I want it to be the last smart speaker, the last Bluetooth speaker I would ever need.
I want it to be there, and it's not, and here's how you get there, and here are my criticisms, here's how you fell short. That's not me hating on it, like saying I must hate Apple.
Yeah.
No, this is saying like, I know what I want, and I know how to get to what I want, and these are the things that you left out
and
that would have made it great.
And if you would just do this, I'll buy five of them.
Exactly. So yeah, that criticism sometimes gets flipped on its head, like, you must hate Apple, oh, you must never, you must hate HTC, you must hate these things. No, I like them so much that I'm willing to give them the feedback and criticism that I think takes them to that level where I would love them.
Speaking of that, that actually pivots to literally the next question in my list,
sure,
which is, how do you deal with constructive criticism when it actually shows up and is constructive? Mm-hmm. And then also, how do you parse that from just general negativity?
Yeah, I think it's easy to tell when criticism is constructive and useful when you agree with it. So if someone comes through and says, like, yo, I hated this video, you clearly put no effort into it, I'm unsubscribing, it's like, well, this person is just kind of just being negative for almost no reason. And I know I put effort into it. But if someone comes through and says, hey, look, the audio was off about this video, I didn't like it, next time you can use a shotgun mic, like, that person's not hating. That's the same sort of feedback we're giving when we're reviewing products, where we're like, look, I love these videos, I just wish it had like this one extra thing, and then it would be amazing. And that's useful feedback, and that I can take and internalize and try to help make the next thing better.
Do you think that part of the difference is something being actionable?
Definitely helps. That's what I would consider a bullet point of constructive criticism, is something that you can do next time. An example is, we just started getting into car videos, and every time we do a car video, there's like, yo, I've seen some car videos with this thing you could also try, or this thing you could also do. And that's perfect. That's like the thing that makes us better at the next thing.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's framed harshly, I mean, my first couple of videos, my audio sucked.
Yep.
It was bad. And I had no on-camera presence, no charisma, total lack of energy. It was pretty god-awful. But that's how you get better, is when people, like, if it's well-intentioned, even if it's a little harsh, if you can take that and then you can internalize it and say, I don't like that about it either. Mm-hmm. And I want to get better. And they gave you a nugget of, that would change this, or that would fix it, or that would solve it. That's helpful, even when it's not framed in a, hey, you know, nice, good job, nice try, like, gives you, you give you the
part
pat
of it
on
is
the
also
head.
Yeah, the internet, part of it is just people want to be seen, and they may feel like if you give a generally level-headed constructive paragraph, they'll never read that. But if I frame it like an outraged fan, maybe he'll read it. So they get a little more extreme with it.
Do you think that's our part for literally responding to those things more often than we respond to the good things?
I think it can be. Even if I don't personally respond just to the crazy outraged people, other people do. So that when they come to my channel, they're like, how do I get Marquez to see this comment? They're going to be reminded of those other instances. So it's not even necessarily that we're doing it. It's just the way they view the internet.
Yeah, I would think that that's actually, you know, that's a fair point. What are your thoughts about internet culture today?
Internet culture. It's a mixed bag. It's more welcoming than ever, because there's now that it's everywhere. There's a community for everything. But because there's a community for everything, there's a community for every terrible thing too, and there's some pretty terrible stuff.
That's a good point.
So you gotta kind of, you get the good with the bad. It comes with the territory, they say. So I don't mind it, and I kind of know where I'm going, and I make what I would want to watch, and that's fine for me on the internet. But internet culture is growing just like culture.
What about you as a consumer, and what do you like to actually consume? And do you like focus on just consuming things that make you feel good, or?
Sure. I like challenging views. The thing is, I don't watch that many, people get mad at me for this, I don't even use a Netflix account. I don't have a Hulu account. I just watch a lot of YouTube videos. I watch movies once in a while.
Why would people be mad at you for that?
Well, because they're like, oh, you're really into cinematography. Clearly, you watch a lot of movies, right? I'm like, I haven't watched a movie since January.
No,
like,
it's called theater. You watch Peter McKinnon and you watch Devin Graham. And we were just reminiscing nostalgically about Freddie Wong.
Yep.
I really want Freddie to kind of come out of full retirement.
There is a lot of that stuff. And to be fair, there's a lot to learn from watching movies. When I watched Guardians of the Galaxy, and I know that they shot it on the same camera I use, I was constantly distracted by how good those shots looked. So that's a part of me too. Like, I probably should watch more movies. But yeah, a lot of what I watch is YouTube videos. I watch a lot of tech on YouTube. I watch a lot of news on YouTube. Philip DeFranco is an example of someone like I've followed for a while, where I just... That's just where I learned what happened today.
Yeah. You know? I can do that. And here's why I watch the Phil for the news, is because I know that however much horrible he's about to put in front of me, he's going to redeem it with today and awesome, and I'll have that little moment of relief, and yeah. then I can actually go and enjoy those things, and my day will be better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most news is negative just by nature, so it's yeah. kind of awesome to have that segment of the show. Yeah, it's definitely, I watch a lot of YouTube, and I watch a lot of just things that interest me in general. Mm.
Do you think that with what they're getting ready to do with Instagram, mm-hmm. with long-form content, mm-hmm. do you think that that might mean Instagram might be the YouTube competitor that everybody's been looking for? Because I always speculated that the only companies that could truly compete with YouTube would be Amazon, Apple, Facebook, or Microsoft, because they have the technology, the server resources, the cash necessary yeah. to subsidize it for 5 years at a loss.
Yeah.
But here's Instagram's interesting.
Here's the thing about YouTube competition, which a lot of people forget. Search. Like, you can have as much great video content. Like, look at Facebook, for example. There mm-hmm. is an immense amount of hours of Facebook video now. And you can put it in front of as many eyeballs as you want, and you can have it as complete and thorough and as many features as you want. And you can have as much cash as you want and as much eyeballs and advertising. But if you don't have search, when I want to go find a video on the internet, I'm going to search for it, and I better find that video on your platform. So YouTube, I want to find, let's say, iPhone 10 review. I'm going to go to YouTube.com, search iPhone 10 review. There's all the iPhone 10 reviews. If I want to go to Facebook video and find iPhone 10 reviews, if I want to go to Instagram video and find all that, Instagram has search. I'll give them that.
They have better than Facebook search.
Exactly. They have the beginnings of that. So I could see that being useful. But when you say something like, you know, Microsoft video, like, again, like, there's Bing, and you'd have to build up on that
Bing?
A little bit. It exists, I guess.
It exists.
So that's usually where I look at for YouTube competition insight.
I agree with that. It's like, it's why I felt there would be like three major steps that someone would have to make to be a true YouTube competitor. They would have to have an ad network, which is really difficult to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Apple's getting really into selling advertising, which is what piqued my curiosity there.
New to that.
Amazon does have some advertising capability, and then they do have their own e-commerce platform, which really, there's something there, but I think that that also skews the question of trust on the content, if you know.
Yeah, because it's Amazon, that would be all, like, I've worked with Amazon a little bit, and lately their push is putting videos under product pages. So you see people who have reviewed the product, but then you also see, like, an ad that looks, like, overly friendly, but, like, is this a personality, or, like, what am I watching? Like, it's a weird place kind of to watch a video.
I think it's going to challenge our sense of trust with that. Like, so there's that. You know, Twitch is its own thing, I think. So I don't really look at that. But, and then Microsoft, I don't believe that they could get content right. I don't think Facebook can get content right. I don't think any of them could get the relationship with creators right. But Instagram is intriguing, and it's one I hadn't considered until they said, hey, long form content, and I thought about it. I was like, wait a minute.
At this point, I see original content in two places, and that is YouTube and Instagram. I'd say 90% of the video I come across on Facebook is just ripped from YouTube. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a problem for anyone at this point who doesn't have content. Amazon's trying. They're trying to get people to make video for products, but Instagram's, intriguing and compelling.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's see. This one is really different. Mm-hmm. Everyone asks about where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10? But very few people, except for my friend Chris Ducker, great entrepreneur. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Nah.
I think you guys would actually hit it off. I think you'd really enjoy his British sense of humor. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? Because in 15 years, that puts you at 39, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
You know, I'll be 49. Like, I'm already over the hill.
Huh. 39.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I, as much as, like, I should be thinking about that, but, like, honestly, up until, like, the last couple of years when someone said, where do you see yourself in the future, I was thinking about the next video. Like, I really did not have a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. Now, I think I've expanded that foresight to maybe 2 years, 3 years from now, where I can see, like, maybe a YouTube Red series, maybe these additional playlists and these content focuses, and maybe a merch store and things built around it. I can see that 2-year, 3-year future. But 15 years, so many things can change, both in tech, on the platform. I've been doing this for 10 years. You got to double the life of YouTube. Like, mm-hmm. we could be in a totally different place in 15 years. So
yeah.
I would struggle to answer that. I'd just say I hope I'm making something that people enjoy.
What about in life? Like, because the thing is, there are interesting aspects to your life we get to see glimpses of. Mm-hmm. Like, you are literally like an ultimate frisbee juggernaut.
Yeah.
You know? And you got the color scheme to match.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, little Marvel reference there. But, like, you know, that's in your life right now. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that in a minute. But it's like, in 15 years, beyond even, say, the business, where do you think you want life to be? Like, how do you want to feel in 15 years?
Yeah, I think I'll probably still be playing Ultimate, as old as 39 seems in my head
it's
right
super
now.
Young.
It is, yeah, it's yeah. super young. You can say that. No, yeah. I think I'd probably still be playing. Honestly, in Ultimate, there's something called Masters Division, which is like, what, is that, Andrew, is that 35 and older? Masters?
30, and I think Grandmasters is 35.
Grandmasters. So there's like different age brackets of competition, uh-huh. so you can still hang around and play with people at a similar age.
Yep.
I imagine myself still being active, still being involved in a lot of social and tech. But it's tough to even imagine anything else.
That's why I love this question. And that's why I love that, like, you know, Chris asked everyone this question. It's why I stole this question from Chris. Like, because I think it's real. And I also think that it's something that when you talk to people, if you can get them to think about something they haven't really thought before.
Definitely.
It's
yeah.
like, I think that's kind of almost like a gift, like
yeah.
to think differently about something like, oh, wow, where do I see myself or where is my life going? Like, yeah. So I did bring up Ultimate Frisbee and
yes.
like, how did you get into that? I definitely wanted to ask, how did you get into Ultimate
Frisbee? Ultimate, yes.
Yeah.
So I went to a high school in New Jersey called Columbia High School that mm-hmm. happens to be where the sport was invented in 1968.
Wow.
So, you know, there's an alumni game in the parking lot where it was invented.
50 years old now?
50th anniversary this
wow.
year. Yeah. So, yeah, it's probably back in 2007 when I got there, it would be a bigger scene at that school than most. So I could have played volleyball, basketball, whatever. I had friends that played Ultimate. They said, hey, come out to a tryout, come out to a practice. I loved it. They were good friends. I started playing with them. And pretty quickly after that, I think it was originally a summer camp I found in Maplewood. So it's just that community is pretty vibrant there. And I've stuck with it ever since. So I've had someone actually recently ask me, like, how do people find Frisbee if they're an athlete? Do they come from football? Do they come from soccer? How does it work? And I think it's just a matter of finding it early and sticking with it.
Nice. Just like pretty much anything else.
Yep.
I mean, you found your love of tech and video creation early and you stuck with that too.
Yep.
So it's like, I mean, when I think about you, I think about like the fact that it's like, well, Marquez was an athlete. Mm-hmm. Marquez was a business major. Marquez is a tech enthusiast and like Marquez is a cinematographer. Like these are things I don't think everyone might associate with you.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at you, that's what I'm thinking and that's, you know,
sure.
what I see.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like,
fair.
I also think audiophile. I also think basshead.
Yeah, yeah. Cinematography comes with like is there a word for like audiophile, but for video? It would be like that.
We'll come up
a
with
a file, crispophile. I don't know. That's a thing now.
Yeah.
It's in the dictionary.
Yeah. We'll make it happen. Oh, yeah. Shirt coming soon, right? Like,
exactly. Dictionary definition right there.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah, no, that's super interesting to me. That being said, it ties into our last question for this interview.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to either, you know, a young Marquez, a young version of yourself, or alternatively, what advice would you give to young people today who might be watching this? If we have somebody who's in the audience that's 14 and like maybe they're going to be a YouTuber, or maybe they just love technology, or maybe they're just trying to figure out what they love. What would you say to them?
My advice is typically, look, everyone starts somewhere. And a lot of when you look at like YouTube is clearly the platform to be on if you want to make video. But when you look at YouTube in 2018, it can seem overwhelming. It can seem saturated. It can seem like there's a big barrier to entry. But at the same time, if you're watching this video, you probably have a device with a camera on it. You probably have the ability to talk about something you love to a camera. And if that's what you're after, that genuine connection or just wanting to talk and share what you love with something, with the rest of the internet, just do it. And it might not be the best quality. It might not catch the most eyeballs. You might not be famous overnight. You might not be that yodeling kid. You might not be backpack kid. It's okay. Not everyone gets to do that. But starting from a good place and building from there is my genuine recommendation. And I think you're at an age where it's definitely possible.
I think for all of the barrier to entry stuff, mm-hmm. when you got started, when I got started, like the barriers to entry were a lot higher. Mm-hmm. Like now it's usually a given that as a teenager, most people, at least in the US, Canada, UK, and you know, the Western world, you get access to this.
Yeah.
This is everything right now. This is more powerful than anything we ever started with.
Ever. Way ever. Better. That's 1,000 times better than the first camera I ever used.
Me too. I think like my first camera, like legit camera, was a Sony HD Webby. It's interesting that I still use Sony today.
Yeah.
Back to my roots, right? What was your first camera?
Sanyo ZAK-D CG10. Little pistol grip camcorder, about that big, 1080p, really close focus distance. So I can do macro stuff. Uh-huh. Had a tripod mount on the bottom. That thing was great.
And you're still as enthusiastic talking about it today.
Yeah,
as
I love that thing.
Yeah, so you always remember your first. Like, everyone starts at zero. Everyone starts somewhere, just as Marquez said. And, you know, I definitely agree with that advice. I mean, the thing is, it comes down to what the theme of this channel and the theme of my podcast is. It's mm-hmm. go out there and create something awesome today. Create something awesome, put it out into the world, share it with other people like you.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, speaking of which, thank you so much for helping me create something awesome for this
sure.
audience, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah.
Guys, so I hope you guys really enjoyed this interview with Marquez Brownlee, aka MKBHD. That's a lot of acronyms. I just threw at them. But, you know, I think it was a great conversation. We would love to get some feedback from you guys. So make sure you're following us on all the social media in the show notes. And if you are definitely a fan of this episode, make sure you're showing Marquez some love over in Twitter. All right, you guys, take care. And remember, go out there and create something awesome today.